The plight of migrants has made headlines for several weeks now as we have witnessed the largest movement of refugees in Europe since the Second World War. And closer to home, we have had our own cases, the most recent being Australia's deportation of New Zealanders back here, despite having lived the majority of their lives in Australia. And just last week, Ioane Tisiota was deported back to his home of Kiribati after his claim of being a climate change refugee was dismissed by the courts here. And many columnists have been devoted to the issue of immigration. How many people should be let in? What are the economic costs and benefits of increased immigration? Is New Zealand even big enough to sustain higher numbers? Will it lead to higher unemployment here? Two people who know the subject very well, Dr. Eric Crampton, head researcher at the New Zealand Initiative, and former Cabinet Minister Matt Robson. He was instrumental in achieving justice for Algerian asylum seeker Ahmed Zawi. You will remember the case. Matt now specialises in immigration law. Matt and Eric, welcome to the Sunday Roundtable.
Good morning to you, Wallace. Good morning, Eric.
G'day.
Eric, you first. Is it right? Will you ask, is it right only to think about the national interest when it comes to immigration, which is what seems to happen these days?
Yeah, that seems to be the right question. If we go back 100 years when women were starting to enter the workforce, did we ask how terrible this would be for men's wages? Well, actually, a lot of people did, and that in the United States sparked some of the labor market regulation that was designed not to achieve sort of equity for men and women, but to keep women out of the workforce by pricing them out. Brian Kaplan's an economist at George Mason, and he phrases it this way. He says, what would you think about a law that said that blacks couldn't get a job without permission from the government, or women couldn't get a job without government permission, or gays or Christians or anybody else? If we think that'd be really objectionable, why do we think that it's okay to say that people, just because they're born on the wrong side of a border, have to get government permission to get a job or to buy a house?
What do you reckon about that, Rob? Has he got a point?
I think he's got a very good point, and it comes to the real issue of immigrants, that we often get looking at the question of an immigrant as a thing rather than a person, and how they are, where they fit into the scheme of things, families, what they do, how they get here, etc., how they're connected to New Zealanders. And the question of discrimination is a big one, because label someone an immigrant, label them a refugee, make it a pejorative term, and it's far easier to pass punitive regulations, emotional questions. So they're taking our jobs, they're doing this, they're doing
that. There's a lot of emotion around that word, isn't there, immigrant?
Yes, and it's also, for politicians, it's one of the key issues which they can either win or lose votes. They're very aware of that. So rather than going out and educating on this issue and getting to the facts, putting the facts on the table, it's much better to talk about Asian invasions or things like that.
Well, we're going to come to a couple of those issues very shortly. Let's start with Australia, though. Is Australia justified in deporting Kiwis who've spent most of their life in Australia back to New Zealand? What do you think about this issue?
Well, that's a tough question. If a system lets more migrants in, if it's able to deport ones who then engage in criminal activity, I'd have to lean on the side of having that. If it lets you have more migrants and have more popular support for immigration, then on net it's better.
Matt?
Well, the thing is, it's a matter of gradations. I mean, I've got a personal interest in this. I am an Australian citizen living in New Zealand for 40 years. I've been protected by the justice of the New Zealand system. I mean, I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't been before the courts. But I've certainly represented many people. It's a gradation thing. Obviously, if someone comes on a visitor's permit and they offend in their first week, you have perhaps an easy way to say they're gone. They came here as a visitor. Someone comes on a work visa, maybe a bit more stringent. Once they're into residence, you're looking at human beings. Beings who've got possibly families, connections, etc., and you need to then have a system, certainly under international law you do, where you have a look at that person's circumstances as to whether they should be deported or not.
Well, one thing you were saying, one main circumstance over all this issue is whether or not they have ties. They put ties down into a country, surely. Now, that is a big thing, Eric. If that person has been there for many, many years, sure, put down family ties, have had children in Australia.
I agree.
I mean, you've got to be shocked by, sure, what's happening here, being deported.
I agree. First best is not deporting people. But if you were to offer me a deal that would say New Zealand could, say, double or triple its numbers of migrants if we were to put in place a few mechanisms that would take some of the sting off of it for those voters who really hate having more immigrants, and if one of those were deportation for those who'd engage in any criminal activity, it's a deal I'd have to take.
Well, I disagree with Eric there. I understand what he's saying. I wouldn't make it a deal. I would try and explain to our population it's a government's responsibility that there are steps in place, that if someone is an undesirable person here, they can be deported.
Yep.
But there are a number of provisions there which I'm sure anybody who looks at it rationally would think about, and that is the question of what happens to their children, what happens to their wife, what are other human factors that need to be considered.
It's the human factor. Well, here's something, Matt and Eric. Violentist. In fact, this is the front page of the Sunday News this morning. Violent Australian criminals are being allowed to stay in New Zealand when they're released from jail, even though Australia doesn't extend the same courtesy, Eric. So 30 Australians are locked up here. Even if they have been resident for 10 years or more, are they allowed to stay here, Eric?
Well, I agree that New Zealand takes a far more humane approach to this than does Australia, and I don't disagree with anything that I've heard so far in sentiment. It's more what can we do to facilitate more migrants coming to New Zealand or to Australia if you're in Australia. Yeah, in an ideal world, people would be seeing these as human beings. And
in an ideal world?
Yes. It'd be much better if we could get to a spot
in any
where people
world,
weren't...
surely.
Oh, we start with the voters that we have and politicians facing the political constraints that they do. We can wish that those were otherwise, and we can try to talk to people about the benefits of migration, how important it is for New Zealand and for the migrants themselves, and how ridiculous it is just to consider only the benefits to current New Zealanders of increasing immigration quotas. But we are stuck with the political realities we
All
have.
Right. Your thoughts on this, sunday@radionz.co.nz, because I know you will have them. You can text us 2101 and also on Twitter @RNZ_Sunday_AM. Now, Matt, the number of people wanting to live in New Zealand has reached new highs. Annual net migration hit 60,000 for the first time. It's a record. So in July and August alone, that adds 10,000 people of working age to the population. Is that going to place real strain on those Kiwis looking for jobs?
That's a myth in terms of the putting strains of people looking for jobs. If you think about the jobs in New Zealand where people come in, where there's a shortage, for to start at the professional side of it, doctors, nurses, carpenters, etc., there's plenty of work for people who've got skills. We don't say they're pushing people out. But also in the unskilled area, if you just walk into a rest home here on a Sunday morning, where we are now, what will you find? You'll find that, the majority of the people close to it, particularly in the Auckland region, are those who are immigrants, probably on work visas, or maybe they've got residence, whatever. But they're immigrants. And a range of jobs which New Zealanders born here aren't going to do are filled by those people. The second thing is, remember that when people come here as immigrants, they add to the economy. They buy houses, or they buy services, they send their children to school, etc., etc. So in terms of the economy, immigrants aren't just taking jobs, they're creating jobs as well. That's a fact.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but looking at the figures here, BNZ, they're predicting that unemployment will go from 5.9% now to nearly 7% mid-2017, just in time for the election. We talked about politics before. What's the bet that immigration is going to be one of the hot button political issues of the year when people see that annual net migration has hit 60,000 for the first time, a record, and then you've got 7% unemployment in 2017? You're going to get this issue,
Well, I would think that what you do as a politician is, of course, you can either bend to these issues and discriminate, if you like. But you could also point out that one of the things we're demanding in Australia is justice for New Zealanders who go there. And you get in Australia the same type of thing. These Kiwis coming here are taking our jobs. I get it from my family. I go to Queensland and they tell me, hey, all of your people are coming over here. They're taking all our jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ignoring the facts of what New Zealanders who've gone to Australia have contributed. They've even given us Queensland, where I come from, a Prime Minister, which they regret. Premier of the
Queen. Eric, you talk quite a bit about this, don't you, in terms of people always talk about the cost of immigrants, you know, the cost of refugees, because it is a sticking point for many Kiwis. Each refugee costs, for example, $80,000 in health, housing, education, social development. So that's a cost on the national ledger. What about the economic benefit?
Well, it's interesting.
When regard to migrants.
It's interesting that we count education as a cost on that front. We typically see education as an investment in the future, and so long as those kids will be employed here someday, the government will be reaping tax revenues out of that in the future. We don't typically consider it a cost of having low-income families that we have to spend a whole pile on education for them, well in excess of what they're contributing in terms of the tax take, but we're happy to make those kinds of arguments with respect to those who aren't quite here yet. So I wouldn't be too keen on counting the education as part of the cost, but there's a way around it too, that in Canada they allow private individuals and community groups to sponsor refugees and take on some of those costs themselves. So here we've been stuck in this ridiculous debate where churches and other groups have been lobbying the government to try and increase the quota, and everybody then argues about what the right number is. In Canada, instead, a community group or a group of five individuals that wants to sponsor a refugee can just say, yeah, we'll put them up for the year. We're going to cover their basic income for the year, make sure that they're housed. We're going to help them to integrate into the community. We're going to take that cost on ourselves. Give us another one. And they're able to do that. Those are extra refugees that come in on top of the government allocation, and they have better outcomes than the ones that come in on the government allocation.
Do they?
Yeah. Employment outcomes are a lot better because you develop those kinds of community links that are really important. As important as they are in Canada, they're going to be even more important here. It's practically impossible to get a job here until you've got locals who will vouch for you and who will say that you'll do a good job, that you're not going to be an embarrassment to the company. That matters a lot in very small countries like New Zealand.
Well, there's also another thing about education and health, and that is that people come, they're educated, they've got usually good health because we bring a lot of young people in, and we're actually benefiting from other countries. We bring in doctors and carpenters and tradespeople and all types of educated people. We don't pay for their education. They contribute to New Zealand. And in education as well, we think about the thousands of international students. If you go down, I'm in Auckland, of course, for those listeners who are not here, but other centres as well. Yeah, Queen Street would be dead. The businesses would be dead. Lots of unemployment would be there because there wouldn't be. It's the international students who are bringing to the economy. So on education, on health, we're actually often.
But what about Eric's idea? Would that work? I mean, you're a former minister. This idea of a kickstart or a pledge me style thing. So in Canada, they reckon it's about $32,000 for a family of six. So you're allowed to fundraise yourself to stump up or help support a family or a grouping of refugees outside of the government circles. Would that work? Is that something that you could see working?
It's a new thought to me. I'm not quite sure whether it would work, but if it's worked in Canada, of course it's worth looking at. And coming, the community helping people and taking these initiatives have happened in the past. They've happened in New Zealand. They happen voluntarily. But the Canadian system sounds interesting.
Yeah. Fundamental to making it work, I think, too, though, is liberalizing our land use planning in our urban centers. Some of the concerns around they took my job are a little ridiculous when you look at the empirics on it. There seems to be a bit of a wash. But when you look at housing, we have such tight housing supply regulations, and especially in the place that migrants want to go, which is Auckland. Making it easier to build more apartment buildings, more medium-density places as you move away from downtown, and then easing up on the urban boundary to let there be more houses would make it a lot easier to accommodate a lot more people. It would be better for Auckland that way, too. You wouldn't have these big price spikes that come up whenever migration numbers happen to change.
That's right. An interesting development in Australia along these lines is in more what were thought of as more conservative rural areas, they've been welcoming refugees, people who came to Australia as refugees, because of the revitalization. They've also discovered them as human beings. They've found these people come from interesting places, that they've got a lot to contribute, and together that they learn, Australian-born citizens, and new Australians.
Well, that's another idea too, right? Allowing our regions to specify a quota over top of what the government's already letting in. So Michael Woodhouse has already made some moves in that direction with giving extra points for migrants who say that they're happy to live outside of Auckland.
Although regional mayors have been fairly lukewarm on the idea, haven't they? The mayor of Clutha District asking why migrants were being given incentives when there were unemployed youth in need of opportunities.
Well, if you let regional councils specify a target above the current national one, some places would want to do it, others wouldn't.
I'm on the Sunday Roundtable with Eric Crampton and Matt Robson talking about the issue of immigration and your thoughts too. Sunday at radioNZ.co.nz, text 2101. I want to ask you both about the changing, the makeup of New Zealand society, though. A lot of people might be concerned that an influx of migrants, Matt, would somehow change the face of New Zealand, change the community, as it already has, no doubt. Should it matter? Do we need to have a straight-up conversation on whether we have the balance right? So I was talking to someone at a function of a couple of weeks ago saying, you know, when you're walking down Dominion Road and you might see any number of signs in Chinese, but very few Māori signs. Is that an issue for the next 50 years to get the mix and balance right?
Well, first of all, we could say that why blame the Chinese for the fact that New Zealand for so long has not acted properly towards Māori? And obviously, I don't want to get to that perhaps full debate at the moment, but the history of New Zealand since 1840, the wars, the land wars, etc., shows that we have, and the statistics for Māori. Of course, it's a big area. But what New Zealand has been shaped by was a policy since 1840 which wanted us to be as British as British. So that the discriminatory acts that were brought into New Zealand, the various, they're called Alien Acts, the Immigration Undesirable Exclusion Act, etc., made New Zealand what it was, a much narrower society, to be as British and as white as possible. So when you remove that discrimination, and you naturally, in the area that we live in, we have a more diverse population. But it isn't just the Chinese or the Asians, where it's quite often easy to get an emotional response from people, even a very racist response. It was the same towards Pacific Island people. It was the same towards anybody who wasn't British. The Southern Europeans were excluded from New Zealand at one stage. There were reports, government reports, saying people from Southern Europe don't settle like us, etc., etc. So what happens in New Zealand is to have a society where we first of all look at the areas where we've just got pure, straight-out prejudice. And there's a big role to play there across our whole society to change that.
Eric, we only have 30 seconds. Your thoughts, the changing nature of New Zealand society. Any concerns?
It doesn't concern me. I think that I came to New Zealand because I saw it as the best place in the world for the kind of place that I want to live. And I think that when migrants have choice across places that they might go to, we're going to be getting the ones that value New Zealand for what it is and are going to try and make it even better.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Eric Crampton and Matt Rodson, the Sunday Roundtable on Immigration. Thank you both for joining us.
Pleasure.